I am Doug Rupert. I'm from RTI International in just outside of Raleigh, North Carolina. And as Laura mentioned, I'm going to be talking today about a study that we have done with the Food and Drug Administration, which is an experimental study of quantitative benefit info in DTC drug ads. So I just want to step back for a second and talk about what the heck that even means. So if you watch or see a typical direct-to-consumer prescription drug ad, it might say something like, drug A has been shown to lower high cholesterol. Or, in clinical trials, drug A has been shown to lower high cholesterol to normal levels. But as we know, not everybody who takes a drug is going to benefit from it. Not everybody who takes a drug is going to have all the side effects from it. There are probabilities involved. And so FDA is very interested to see what happens when we provide consumers with more information. What happens when we actually talk to them and provide them with the info? I'm going to start my stopwatch here, too, so I have a good idea of where I'm going. I go notoriously long on many things, so Laura may have to give me the hook. What happens when we provide consumers with that info about how many people actually benefit from the drug? Does that make a difference? Are they able to process it? So that was really the purpose of this study, to see how consumers handle that information. I also actually need to start off with a caveat and an apology that, as sometimes happens, things have changed since the abstract was submitted. And so what I had hoped to talk to you today about was what we currently know about direct-to-consumer drug advertising, how we designed our study, how people react to typical DTC ads, and then how adding that quantitative benefit info changes those reactions. FDA has decided that I can talk to you about the first three of those, but unfortunately not the fourth. There are some additional stakeholders inside FDA that they need to run things by, and they're just not quite ready to share it publicly yet. So it's not going to be quite as engaging a presentation as I would hope, but there are plenty of things to talk about how individuals responded within the study to traditional DTC drug ads. So if you have issues, you're welcome to see me afterward, and I will deal with them on a one-to-one basis. So, no financial relationships to disclose. As some of my friends in the audience know, my wife and I actually had twins recently, so I have no finances whatsoever at all, and will not for the next 20 years. So what do we know about direct-to-consumer drug advertising? We know very few countries allow it, just the U.S. and New Zealand. We know pharma spends a ton of money on it, $4.2 billion, which was a GAO estimate back in 2005, so I think it has increased since then. We know that spending on prescription drugs increases prescription drug use, prescription drug sales. We know that prescription drug advertising increases requests for those drugs. Some of the challenges associated with that is the evidence is mixed about whether or not, even though we see an increase in drug sales and use, whether that's appropriate, whether more informed decisions are really being made as a result of ads. We know, as I mentioned, that there's limited information on drug efficacy and risks in the ads themselves, and we know that consumers struggle with concepts of efficacy and risk, that they overestimate drug efficacy, and that a lot of physicians consider many of the requests for specific drugs to be clinically inappropriate, not indicated for the illness, patient doesn't have the illness. So the purpose of our study, as I said, was to find out what happens when we add that quantitative benefit info. So what we did is designed an experimental study that had forced exposure to a TV or print ad for a mock prescription drug. We conducted it with an online probability-based sample, which is representative of the U.S. adult population, had just over 4,800 folks. And we selected folks who were actually diagnosed with high cholesterol. We created a mock high cholesterol drug, and we wanted to make sure it was relevant to these folks. So only folks who were diagnosed with high cholesterol were in the study. Randomly assigned folks to 38 experimental arms, hence the 4,800 folks. Analysis was a real treat. We basically logged them into the survey, had forced ad exposure to a print or TV ad, and then asked them to complete a short survey. It took about 15 to 20 minutes, measuring their attitudes, recall, behavioral intentions. So what did we manipulate in those experimental arms? Well, first we manipulated the ad type. Half the folks got a print ad, half the folks got a TV ad. We also manipulated the efficacy level. One of the things that we hypothesized is that if we're providing people information about a drug's efficacy, how effective that drug is might make a difference in how and whether they recall it and how it affects their intentions. So approximately half the folks got assigned to a high efficacy drug. 65 out of 100 folks who used it saw a benefit. Others got assigned to a low efficacy drug, only 10 out of 100. And then some folks got assigned to that control, which was a typical DTC drug ad. We then took folks and either assigned them into a statistical format or a visual format condition. Again, the idea being that how that quantitative benefit info is presented is going to make a difference. So in the statistical format, some people got the quantitative info as at absolute frequency, 65 out of 100. Other people got it as a percentage. Other people got it as a relative frequency, 32 times more effective or 5 times more effective. And then there were some combinations of those, absolute frequency plus percent, relative frequency plus percent. The other half of the folks got absolute frequency information, but then they also got a visual aid, a pie chart, a bar chart, table, or pictograph. Again, based on the research showing that visuals help folks to comprehend risk and benefit information more thoroughly than without a visual. So this just gives you a sense of some of the drug ads that we designed. There were print ads that we created. You can see the wonderful brief summary page, which is the second one at the bottom that everybody loves with all the risk information, and I'm sure everybody memorizes it. We also filmed an honest-to-goodness ad with honest-to-goodness actors. It was in pre-testing, consumers could not tell the difference between this and a real drug ad, which I think is really one of the strengths and rigors of this study. So what did we find in the traditional DTC ad findings in the control groups of folks who were exposed to a typical drug ad? We saw a couple things. First, we saw that, and I was surprised by this, most folks were able to recall at least one of the benefits from the ad. And this was not forced, this was not prompted recall. This was, what are the benefits of Votrio, was the name of our cholesterol medication. What are the benefits of Votrio? And almost 70% of folks in the print ad condition and over 90% of the folks in the TV ad condition could unprompted recall one of the benefits. As you can see, there's definitely a difference in recall between print and television ad, which I think is partially what we would see in real life, but I think it is also in some ways a little bit of an artifact of the study. You know, you can put a print ad in front of people, but you can't make them read it. You can make people watch a TV ad when you put it in front of them. So I think that, you know, if we were to do this again, we would probably design a measure to really get at how exposed people were to that print ad. They spent about 6 minutes reviewing it, which is not bad. But I think that the lower recall in the print ad may slightly be an artifact of that. What we did see is that whether or not folks currently use a prescription drug made no difference, prescription drug for that condition, for high cholesterol, made no difference in recall, but at least within the print ad, their illness severity did make a difference. People who had more severe high cholesterol, as measured by their actual numbers, these were self-reported numbers, but most folks were able to report a number, very few checked the don't know option, illness severity boosted recall. The more severe your high cholesterol, the more likely you are to recall one of those benefits. When we went to risk recall, it was also, again, surprisingly high. Most folks were unprompted able to recall at least one of the drug side effects or risks as advertised. No real differences in print or TV there. And I think that is probably a function of there being a lot more risks in direct-to-consumer drug ads than there are benefits. You know, the benefit is it lowers high cholesterol. The risk is any of these 15 things, including, you know, instant death, could occur at any time. So it's a little easier to report those. We saw that prescription drug usage and illness severity did not moderate risk recall. So that was something that didn't happen. The illness severity only seems to moderate the benefit recollection rather than the risk recollection. We saw this carried out when we actually asked prompted recall questions, so when it was more of true-false questions with both true benefits and false benefits in there, recall of the risks and the benefits was, again, surprisingly high. Folks were able to recall most of the 8 benefits talked about in the ad, most of the 9 risks talked about in the ad. So, again, we found this pretty surprising that folks were able to recall this much from prescription drug ads. So let's move on to talk about perceived efficacy and perceived risk, because that's the next, I guess, construct, you know, on this continuum towards behavioral change. We know folks can recall the information. What does that mean about how effective they think the drug is going to be, or how risky that they think the drug is going to be, how likely they are to see a side effect? What we saw is it was pretty much right down the middle. It was pretty moderate anticipation about a drug's efficacy, pretty moderate anticipation about a drug's risk. Although we did see, of course, that the television ad resulted in a little bit higher perceived efficacy and a little bit lower perceived risk. When we looked at that as moderated by current prescription drug usage, we saw that current medication usage basically magnified those effects. If you're currently using a prescription drug, you're more likely to see the drug as effective, and you're less likely to see it as risky. We think this is partially because people who are using a current drug and are continuing on a drug are probably seeing some kind of benefit from it. And so they are maybe more likely to think that this advertised drug could work for them too. And likewise, people who are currently taking a drug may not be experiencing side effects or maybe only experiencing minor side effects. And so they think, that stuff they talk about in the ad, it doesn't really happen. When we looked at illness severity, we saw pretty much the opposite. Oh, I'm sorry. We saw the opposite effect. What we looked at is when folks had lower illness severity, they were more likely to perceive the drug as effective. And when they had lower illness severity, they were more likely... I'm getting myself confused here. I apologize. If they had low cholesterol level, they think the drug is going to be more effective. If they have low cholesterol level, they are less likely to think the drug is going to be risky. So that is a little bit different from what we anticipated, but we did see that effect in there. When we got to looking at the behavioral intentions, what we found is they were pretty middle of the road. People had relatively limited intentions resulting from that ad exposure. This was a scale of 1 to 4, really looking at the magnitude of those intentions, how likely they were to follow through on these behaviors based on what they saw in the ads. And folks were somewhat willing to talk to their doctor, search for info, take the drug if it was prescribed for them. And again, I think this is a little bit lower than we expected to see from the study. Although I would like to give the caveat that this was a one-time exposure to an ad. Repeated exposure, I think, would probably change these numbers. If folks see drug advertisements on television and in print over the course of 6 weeks repeatedly, these numbers will probably change a little bit. But this is what we saw from the study. So, as I said, what I had hoped to talk to you today about is the quantitative benefit findings, and I can tell you that they are very, very interesting and very exciting, but unfortunately, I am barred under penalty of probably congressional subpoena from presenting them today. So, it's always, my piece of advice is, it is always a good idea not to tick off a federal Health and Human Services agency, so if you are presented with that ultimatum, you just shake your head and, okay, we'll make it work. So, what can we take away from this? Even without seeing the quantitative, with the experimental arm results, what can we take away from this study? I think a couple things. I take away that benefit and risk recall was actually pretty darn good for exposure to prescription drug ads. Most consumers were able to call at least one of the drug's benefits and risks without prompting. We also saw that they had pretty moderate perceived efficacy and risk perceptions. Folks did not expect a whole lot from the drug, didn't expect a whole lot of risk from it. And that goes back, I think, to some of the research we've seen earlier and that Cheryl talked about, which is people believe if a drug is advertised and approved by the FDA, it must be safe. It must work. We have seen that time and again in other qualitative research that people have these perceptions that if something is FDA approved, it works. It's probably going to work for them. You know, if they had to guess how many people would benefit from the drug, it's probably like 90 out of 100, and that the side effects are going to be very rare or very minor. And of course, we know that's not the reality, but that's what the perceptions are. We saw that current medication usage boosts those expectations. We have higher perceived efficacy and lower perceived risk, and that illness severity limits those expectations. Lower perceived efficacy, higher perceived risk. We also know that exposure to those ads does not result right away in drug-seeking behaviors. There were fairly limited intentions to seek out the drug, seek out more info on the drug, to ask about the drug. So I think what this means in terms of the next steps of the analysis and of presenting the findings is really trying to find out if when we add the quantitative benefit info into the drug ads, does it distract from benefit and risk recall? We know that benefit and risk recall is good. Does adding that quantitative info help, or does it overload people? Are they not able to process it? Does that information inflate perceived efficacy and deflate perceived risk? And so again, do people really process the information? Or are they using it as kind of a peripheral cue? Ooh, numbers. That's effective. We have seen that with other research. And so that's one of FDA's key questions is, do people actually use the information, or do they just use it as a signpost that this must be a really good drug because it's presenting numbers on its effectiveness? Does the quantitative info result in stronger intentions to ask about, research, try the drug? And I think most importantly, does it lead to more informed, appropriate medication decisions? Because at the end of the day, that's what I think we in public health and what FDA in particular are really interested in. Do these ads, how can we regulate the ads? How can we adjust the ads in a way that they lead to more appropriate decisions on the part of patients? So those are the next steps. I do want to acknowledge the study team and authors at RTI, the Food and Drug Administration, and Knowledge Networks, who we actually partnered with to do the online study. One of my co-authors, Dooley Chowdhury, is in the audience and has done a fantastic job with it. And because I am a total nerd, I have reference slides for your later viewing, which will be on the I think on the conference website if you're really interested. And actually, if you go to rti.org/APHA, we'll have this presentation up there, and you're welcome to download it from there. So thank you all for your time.